Hello, my name is Tom Sullivan. I am the voice behind what is called the Narrated Puritan on Sermon Audio. I want to talk about 36 years of narrating books, how it started, the journey along the way, and the things that I've learned. This year marks my 40th year on my journey of the Christian way, but I certainly wasn't converted in 1981. That's just where I began my journey. A lot of bad things had happened in my life. I was in the Air Force in those days, and I already had made a profession of being a Christian as a teenager. Really didn't mean anything. I had a classmate that I respected a lot, and he had made a profession himself. And he showed me this tract called Four Spiritual Laws, and I didn't really understand what he was saying, but I prayed the prayer in the back. What's really striking as I think back upon it all is how many people who were part of my journey, who God used to help me on this way, have defected from the faith. And it's a marvel to me that I am continuing, and I would attribute it a lot to narrating audiobooks. I had a very extended awakening, and by the grace of God, when I started to get serious about the Christian life, very early on, God directed my path so that I, in the first 6 months, started reading junk, and I didn't know it was junk. I remember some Kenneth Hagin, Watchman Nee, even buying a cassette of Robert Schuller. But the one thing that I had going for me, I could never be in anybody's library and not ask about the books that were on the shelves. And I was involved with some Plymouth Brethren, though I never became one, and was invited to lunch at a house in Boise City, Idaho. And I was looking through the bookshelf and saw a book by A.W. Pink. And I would read out a name, and then somebody there would tell me whether he was supposed to be good or bad. All I remember was Gleanings in Genesis. And I was told that was supposed to be a good author, and I made a mental note of that, and that was really important. The other thing was that my chaplain was a five-point Calvinist from the Evangelical Free Church. He was the first one to tell me the names David Martin Lloyd-Jones and John Murray. Though I didn't pursue anything or find anything of John Murray for some years to come, I immediately found my first Lloyd-Jones book, An Exposition on the Sermon on the Mount. So by 1984, let's move quickly ahead, and I was attending Trinity Baptist Church through some other amazing events and providences in my life that led me there. I was stationed in New York City in the Coast Guard. And Trinity Baptist Church had an excellent bookstore, very good prices in those days, and so many of the prices I still have memorized from the Trinity Book Service. In a day, you could get the 6 volumes of John Flavel for $49.95, Thomas Brooks $49.95, Jonathan Edwards' works for $36.95, the hardback volume of Polemical and Systematic Theology by Earl Dabney for $9.95. The prices were exceptional. But very close to the time that I was going to leave New York City, I was stationed there in the Coast Guard, had a discharge to go back to Montana, but I made a mental note of looking at the works of John Owen and saying to myself, somebody really needs to narrate these so people can listen to them. I was already being fitted for a task like this because I didn't like to type out a letter. My preference was to take a cassette tape and put it in one of those Sony boom boxes and hit the record button, play guitar on it, do other things, read a little bit, and mail it to a sister or a cousin. Well, very early on in the fall, after I had gotten back to Helena, Montana, a friend of mine who was living in Brooklyn, who attended the Trinity Baptist Church with me, sent me the materials for the chapel library, which was then in Venice, Florida. And I was looking through this, and I noticed that some people were recording books for the patrons of the chapel library who were blind. And it was very difficult for them to get anything in Braille like they would like to have had. So they had people already volunteering to narrate these works. So I sent away, and you could borrow these things for free. So I borrowed The Fountain of Life, narrated by a lady, by John Flavel, and I listened to it, and I said, this is narrated wrong. If you don't stop at the comma, the semicolon, the colon, if you don't give these sentences and paragraphs their proper rest, the people listening to you aren't going to understand what Flavel was saying. And so I said, well, why don't I volunteer to do this? So I got a blank cassette from the store, put it in one of my boom boxes, a Sony or whatever I had, and I narrated at the time from four sources for samples. I was applying for something. I had no idea really what I was doing. And I remember I narrated from Archibald Alexander, the book Practical Truths, which had been reprinted years later, but I had a first edition. I narrated some of John Angel James, The Anxious Inquirer. I narrated Matthew chapter 1 to show them that I could narrate the genealogical names without stuttering. And I sent it off, and they liked what they heard because it was read with some conviction, which they weren't used to from the other people narrating for them. Now, I wasn't working yet, and so it was December of 1985. And I got this box in the mail, which contained 12 blank 90-minute Memorex tapes. And I had a note from the chapel library saying they liked what they heard and they wanted me to narrate for them. I was pretty excited about that. And the ironic thing is, I thought I saw God's hand in that, and yet in those days, I never had assurance of salvation. And I wouldn't for another probably 18 months. But I began in earnest, and I narrated The Anxious Inquirer, probably my first book. But I was very interested in historical accounts of revival. So just 2 months later, I was living with my brother in Helena, Montana. And I wasn't working, so I narrated. I actually filled 52 90-minute tapes in the month of February 1986. And one of the things that I narrated, and I shouldn't have, and I didn't know better, was studies on the Sermon on the Mount by David Martin Lloyd-Jones, which was, I'm going by memory, 657 pages, and it took just short of 21 90-minute cassettes. And so I finished off the last tape by giving a biographical sketch of Lloyd-Jones. Well, those tapes, you wouldn't be able to find them anymore. I don't think that they kept them because they were copyrighted. But I never kept copies of those early recordings. But in the providence of God, I now have them because they were ordered from Chapel Library by Stillwater Revival Books, which is in Canada. Reg Barrows is their president. And he took some of those old 90-minute cassettes and converted them to MP3 format and put them on Sermon Audio. Sermon Audio was started in the year 2000, so I had been aware of them since the beginning. Well, in a short while after I moved to Missoula, Montana, the church I was attending to, there was a Reformed Baptist church there. I remember narrating in the basement of the church. I had access to it. And I was still using a Sony boombox. And I remember, it's the only picture, and I know it's around here somewhere, where I'm sitting at a table and somebody took a picture of me with one of those big Hickman editions of Jonathan Edwards' works that were reprinted by the Banner of Truth. And I narrated hours from those volumes. But the mistake that I made was I just narrated one sermon after another. I really needed to split the sermons up between cassettes. But as time went on, I've redone those, some of them many, many times. There are Jonathan Edwards sermons I've narrated 10, 15 times. Well, eventually I moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan in December of 1988. And because I was still single, the pastors wisely counseled me that I probably should live with a family for accountability. and I moved in with the Gentry family, and me and Doug have been so close ever since then. He's the one guy that I could talk to for 1 or 2 hours at a time about the things that I'm reading. He's very, very knowledgeable and a prolific reader himself, and I learned a lot while I was living with them for about 4 years. Learned a lot of new authors. That was where I discovered in his library a paperback published in the year 1969 of a book called Cases of Conscience by Samuel Pike and Samuel Hayward. And when they were on vacation somewhere, I borrowed this paperback book and I narrated it. Don't even know what happened to the originals that were at the chapel library. I had asked for copies of them and they were gone, but all of those have been re-narrated as well. Well, so that I could have privacy and no background noise in the day, I narrated in their basement, which really was not a finished basement at all, but kind of like a cellar where you would store vegetables or something like that. But it worked for me, and I narrated down in that basement the entire treatise on the religious affections by Jonathan Edwards. And that was about 1993. And through the years, I continued to narrate, but I was already working with digital audio, and I had this program called Cool Edit, 1995. I upgraded it to 2000. But later on, in about the year 2003, I started attending the Holland Reformed Baptist Church, and the deacon at that church showed me how to narrate digital audio. At the time, I didn't even know that you could spread out the wave that you see on your screen and you can edit it. I thought that the whole thing that you saw on your screen, an hour recording, is what you got, and I never tried to do digital audio. I was so ignorant. And so many of my early recordings done on cassette, I had no choice but to rewind the tape every time I made a mistake to the sentence right before I made the mistake and start recording again. And the problem is there's no perfect edit on a cassette tape. You could hear a little bit of the background from narrating it before. But by that time, I was using pretty good tape recorders with two Sony mics, quarter-inch adapter inputs. But then I started practicing with digital audio, and for years I was using Cool Edit, and they got bought out by Adobe. I believe their name is Adobe Audition, but because of that, it got out of my price range. So I started looking around, and years ago I started using WavePad, which is developed in New Zealand. It's called NCH Software, and by the way, I'm using it now. I've used it ever since. It serves my purposes perfectly. I had worked with Audacity, and I couldn't get it exactly like I wanted it, and I've never continued to use it. Well, the next big change for me was the deacon at Holland Reformed Baptist Church. I had introduced them to sermon audio. I've introduced so many churches to sermon audio. And as they went to sermon audio in the year 2003, I made a deal with him that I would pay him $1 per 90-minute MP3 because it cost $1 per upload a month after you had had 10 uploads on sermon audio. But in working with other people on sermon audio, and this has happened 2 or 3 times, I never had any control over how they would upload my narration. So in the case of the Holland Reformed Baptist Church, in order for my narrations to not be on the same listing page as the pastor's, they would set the date of the narration to January 1st, 1990 for all of them, which in hindsight makes sense because I was narrating things like John Bunyan, A Few Sighs from Hell, ironically, which was my biggest download in those days. And if you had, say, 210, 215 downloads a month in 2003, 2004, you were doing pretty good. Sermon audio wasn't that big in the day. And I had followed sermon audio all along, so I would watch these other churches who were coming on to sermon audio. So I was there the day that they dropped a recording of Paul Washer and his Shock and Youth message, as they called it. And if you were to look at that on sermon audio and go all the way back to the first couple of positive comments that were left on that sermon, my comment was the second one. I discovered the sermon from the first positive comment. Well, I left that church and went back to the Grand Rapids Reformed Baptist Church in the year 2010, so I was no longer able to put my narrations on sermon audio. And so I had to buy my own web space. And then I learned about podcasting sites, and I started podcasting first with a company that's still around called Podbean. I was with them for a little while, and I went to the web hosting company GoDaddy. And I think it's so ironic, so many of the narrations that I put through GoDaddy onto my site, I don't think they would have had a clue about, because their own advertisements for their GoDaddy site was so seductive that a lot of places wouldn't even air their ads. But that's really been the irony of this. I promote a lot of what I do through Facebook, and they'd never approve of what I'm narrating. And ironically, when I moved to Grand Rapids and got married and moved to the west side of the city, the place that I sat narrating Jonathan Edwards and these sermons on hell, 4.1 miles away, Rob Bell had started a church called Mars Hill in Granville. And so the things that I was given to the world were the direct opposite of what this false prophet was doing. And yet, amazingly, I must say that I've always avoided censor, just keeping it under the radar. Well, a couple of times in God's providence, there were people who were affected by my narrations that decided to narrate themselves. And one of them is on sermon audio, and he was really happy to work with me at first. And the problem with that is you start working with these people and you do anything to upset them, and they hold the site on sermon audio, and this guy is so eccentric, and I had upset him, so he took all of my narrations and purged them from his site, and then did a diatribe against me on sermon audio for everybody to read. So I had to write to the president, Stephen Lee, and let him know I was being attacked. And thankfully, this dear brother wrote to the person of that site and said, "You're not allowed to attack other Christians in this platform." But again, I'd lost an audience, and I had to submit. It's this the will of the Lord. This is the way that he's directing me. There's going to be good times and bad times. And then I discovered that my narrations were going to places and being copied without my knowledge. And I would come across them, and I never got upset. I would usually write to the person and say, "Thank you for airing my narrations." And they were glad to hear from me. They didn't really know anything about me, but I started to have an audience on YouTube, and by God's grace, many of the narrations ended up on YouTube, and they are still there, though the person who runs that site, it's a huge site, with 200,000 subscribers, but I'm not really sure what happened. He stopped communicating with me. Didn't put any more of my narrations up on his site, and I didn't write to him to try to inquire what was going on. I just moved off in my own direction. In the meantime, I was still putting my narrations up on my site, puritanaudiobooks.net, which was being hosted by GoDaddy. Well, very close to the time that I was going to retire from the Postal Service, I'd worked for the Postal Service all this time, there was a handful of men who had a desire to start a Reformed Baptist church in Georgetown Township in Grand Rapids and Granville, Michigan area, because that area was growing so much. We had actually started the idea of doing this some 10 years before. I had actually sat in with a dear friend of mine, and we sought counsel from his elders. He also was a retired pastor. And they just thought that it wouldn't be good to put a church there, especially with his name associated with it, because it might look like that was the whole reason that he moved to Western Michigan, was to start a church in competition with Grand Rapids Reformed Baptist Church and Holland Reformed Baptist Church. So we accepted it, and I kept a low profile for the next 10 years. But one of the men that were involved in that always had a desire that this thing would take off. He just didn't know who would be able to preach for us. And he heard a young man preach who was attending Puritan Seminary, a very gifted man. And I'm trying to be very careful not to name names here, because I've not asked anybody's permission to talk about them. I'm just talking about the overall history of narrating and the journey that God has led me on. But we started this work with this gifted young man who was pursuing a doctorate at a local seminary. And I volunteered to support them, even though I knew that eventually I wanted out of Grand Rapids. I had wanted out of Grand Rapids for years because I couldn't take the winters, especially as a letter carrier. And so we started this church and got us a sermon audio site. And I was starting to put my narrations up on the site. I didn't know if I really had permission. I just thought, since you're paying for this anyway, let's put these things out there. And he never objected to it. But this dear brother had contracted a sickness that incapacitated him to go on, and at the same time we were suffering from the effects of the shutdowns of the coronavirus. Our facility was being rented to us by a church in the area. They were just very, very nice to us, but because of the shutdowns, they said, we have decided that none of the buildings are going to be opened up, and we never recovered. But we had a pretty good cash flow, and so we assisted the brother who was really sick by then, and I asked him to do me a favor. I said, look, we got this web page on Sermon Audio. We have a number of my recordings there. Would it be okay if I use just enough of the funds to keep going for 5 months? Until I can figure out if I can come up with the funds to continue. And they were agreeable to that. So eventually I took the church's name off of the site and I replaced it with a narrated Puritan. And in the meantime, I made a public note that I only had enough funds to go for 3 more months on Sermon Audio. And if I didn't find funding, I had to shut it down. Well, 2 people responded to me. One, a dear brother, who sent me $300, he said, that'll get you through the next 6 months. And then I got a notification from a dear man named Jesse, and he's the one guy I will name. I have such a indebtedness to him. And he said that he wanted me to replace a charge card that we're using to fund Sermon Audio and put his charge card in its place, and he has funded me ever since. And that's so humbling to me, because there are people out there, the audience has grown. In fact, just to give you an idea, in June, we had 15,550 plus viewers of the narrations on the site from 100 different countries. I think one of the most gratifying things that has happened recently, though, is my name is not really on my narrations on Sermon Audio. I just want good recorded materials to get out there, that a lot of people have been listening to my narrations for a number of years, and then they'll find out through Facebook that I'm the one narrating them, and then they say, well, I didn't know you were the one that was doing this. I've been listening to this on the way to work for some time, and it's really been a blessing to me, and I'm so thankful for those people out there. So let me tell you about what happened and how did I end up in Owensboro, Kentucky. When I was looking at a place to retire, I was looking at cost of living, and I was looking at a good church there and weather and so on. So I knew that West Virginia was very inexpensive to live, and I knew there was a Reformed Baptist church there. And I reached out to that pastor, and I'd planned for about a year before I retired to retire in Bluefield, West Virginia. But I went there with my family, And on the second occasion, my wife came with me. The first time, it was just my son. And what she saw, bless her heart, really made her nervous about this as a place to retire. Now, she would have ultimately gone along with me. But behind all this, I saw God working to break me. And that is that I had been pushing for these things all along, but I was making unilateral decisions. I really wasn't trying hard to get my wife to go along. When that imploded, when it fell through, I had to look for a place that she would be interested in, and I knew that would be Louisville. The church in Grand Rapids has started the Louisville Reformed Baptist Church, so we made an exploratory trip down there. She liked the church. I really didn't want to be in that large of a metropolitan area. This is larger than Grand Rapids, and I'd already spent 32 years in Grand Rapids. But in the mid-June of last summer, amazing things happened very quickly. This is the summer of 2020. I was already getting our house ready to sell. I was already making our plans. We were going to make a third exploratory trip to Louisville, but this time I didn't want to be in the metro area. I had chosen an Airbnb in Elizabethtown, but realizing it really was too far away for our purposes. And providentially, about June 16th of last summer, 2020, I got an email from the person running the Airbnb. And by this time, the coronavirus thing was all the news. And they decided that they weren't going to take in Airbnb customers, which is kind of frustrating. I got this news about 9 o'clock at night. I knew that this was causing friction between me and my wife because she really wanted to go to the Louisville work, though there was a Reformed Baptist Church in Elizabethtown. She wanted to be in a larger church and especially around other Dominican ladies. So I just stopped and I reflected about everything that was going on, and I realized I really did not have my wife's affection for all that I was doing. Providentially, 1 week before, I had received a Facebook message from a man who used to attend the church in Grand Rapids, whose wife was from Ecuador and very good friends with my wife. And I knew she was behind this. And I never paid any attention to it until everything started to implode for Louisville. He asked me, have you ever considered Owensboro, Kentucky? And it had never really crossed my mind. There were some background historical reasons for that that had to do with the church that I was attending in Grand Rapids. And also the location, because I was looking at Owensboro in conjunction to getting to Louisville. But once I started to reevaluate everything that was going on, I went downstairs and thought about this note that I'd received from him. I got on my computer and started doing a comparison of Owensboro to Elizabethtown to Jenison, where I was living. And you can do that on a place called bestplaces.net. So I saw that it was a lot less expensive to live there. The other thing is, a pastor who had married us was already in Owensboro and had been since the year 2001, so I sent him a note, and I said, Pastor Waldron, how do you like Owensboro? And he was very kind. He said, well, we like it, but why don't you just come down and check it out for yourself? You know, you have hospitality here. So I wrote back to the person who sent me the initial note, and I said, look, I'm actually looking at Owensboro, and I like what I see. I see some things that I hadn't considered before. The size of the city, the cost of living, and I knew it was a good church because I knew the reputation of the pastor who had married my wife and I. And when he found out I was starting to be serious about this and he told this to his wife from Ecuador, she broke down crying. Now, Betty was interested because, of course, her friend was there. But then something else happened. The pastor brought us up for prayer. I didn't know this, but their prayer meetings were on Sunday night after the service. And he introduced who we were. He said, I'd given them their premarital counseling. I married them, and his wife is from the Dominican Republic. Well, that started a train rolling, and the providential events that happened after that, it was one after the other. I really saw God working in this. A lady sitting in the audience of the church heard Dominican Republic. She was on the staff of a brand new Christian high school that they were starting in the area, looking for a Spanish teacher. So she asked the pastor for my phone number, called me and left a message on my phone answering machine, and I listened to it. I didn't even get through the whole thing, and I said, I got to call this lady back because I got good news for her. When she answered the phone, she told me what she was looking for, and she says, I know it's a shot in the dark, but since you guys are thinking about coming here anyway. And I said, well, I got good news for you. I said, my wife teaches Spanish, French, and Latin. And I told a story of how she was hired at Grace Academy in Wyoming, Michigan, and how enthusiastic they were about her teaching. And also that the Lutheran school in Grand Rapids heard about her and begged her to come, basically sight unseen based on her reputation. And I said, so she's definitely good as a Spanish teacher. So we both left that phone conversation on a high note. I called my wife and said, I think I got some good news for you. Well, to make a long story short, it wasn't just that. There was one thing after another that just indicated to me that this is where that I should be. And as I've been here only since October, I'm starting to find out why. And that is, it's the young people going to these churches. It's the ministerial aspirants who are taking classes at the seminary. I've always had a heart for young men aspiring to the ministry. I always like to talk to them and, you know, studying these works that I have for 40 years, I have a lot to say. Well, now that I'm retired, I'm able to give my narrations a higher priority. I started off on this journey narrating an awful lot of Jonathan Edwards, but more and more, I'm so drawn to John Owen. The exhortations, the warnings, the seriousness. I counted up the observations alone in his massive commentary on Hebrews of chapter 3, verses 7 to 19. It's 125 pages of just observations that's unequaled in the English language. I've just never seen anything like it to urge people on to perseverance in the faith. But also, being retired has given me more time to study. I am not presently an aspirant to the ministry, but I love to teach church history. And one of the things that's been so good about the internet, I got online very early on because I had a class in telecommunications back in 1987 where CompuServe was $24.95 an hour and this service called Prodigy was just being rolled out that had a monthly fee. It really wasn't the internet, but it was online and you were able to communicate and have some good discussions. And while I went along, the internet little by little was starting to be rolled out. The first service that had a flat rate was actually put out by CompuServe. So by 1997, I was online, still at about 56K modems. You old-timers remember those. And eventually, cable connections started to come out, so I was able to get 384K, which was a huge speed improvement. The other thing that has really improved is the USB microphone. When I started off digital recording, I had to put my microphones into a cassette deck that was part of a stereo system because I needed some kind of amplification. But now I'm using three different mics. I have a Samson G-Track Pro, which I'm using for this recording. I have a Blue Yeti microphone that I use for other recordings. And out in the garage at that desk, I have a Rode microphone, but I can't record in the garage. It's just too hot in the summer, so I've made myself a recording studio here in the living room. Now, a couple of last notes about what I'm recording these days, and then I'll bring this to an end. When I started off as a narrator, I could take a book like Thomas Watson's Human Nature in its Fourfold State and narrate it from cover to cover with a lot of enthusiasm. I just don't have that kind of stamina anymore. I don't have the vocal cords to be able to do that anymore. And the other thing is, when you're doing a 90-minute recording, you have to think about your audience. Do they have the perseverance to listen to something for 90 minutes? I try to keep things at about 45 minutes. I have to narrate something that is moving me. If I'm not involved in what I'm narrating, I know I'm not going to keep the attention of all the people out there that are listening. For that reason, I don't work well with people that try to make requests of me or have any stipulations to how I should or what I should narrate. I've audited some seminary classes. It's kind of the same thing for me, that you have your required reading. Required reading becomes work and doesn't impress me as much as spontaneous reading. The type of reading where I learn is where I'm interested in the subject. It's not that those things are not interesting to me. They're just not interesting to me at that time in the way that they are required for the class. Ironically, one of the things that I love to read the most and then teach it is a history of American churches, Reformed churches, and also American revivals. But it's extraordinary to me. There hasn't been a lot of interest in that. And the few that do discuss anything of it know almost nothing of the Second Great Awakening. There is such a misrepresentation of what happened in the Second Great Awakening that shows that from the year 1792 to about 1840, so much of that history has been lost. In 1973, Ian Murray came to the United States and taught on the history of revivals in America at a conference at Harvey Cedars. A lot of us that love that history have a great indebtedness to Ian Murray for originally drawing our attention to it. But he would mention works that were not yet in print that he was quoting for this history series. And one of those was, for example, William Sprague's Lectures on Revival, The History of Virginia by William Henry Foote, The Ministry of Edward Dorr Griffin. And at the time he said these works of Edward Dorr Griffin in two volumes aren't even in print yet. Well, as time went on, Banner of Truth did reprint those works, and there really hasn't been an audience for them, so they went back out of print. Well, in the beginning of a work called Lectures to Young People by William Sprague, there is an introduction by Samuel Miller that has stuck with me all these years, and he said, "There's no natural desire for certain theological literature. There's no demand for it. The supply has to create the demand." And what he means by that is you have to oversupply, and then people see what is out there in literature and they start to read. Well, that's kind of the way that it works here. Because truth be known, on sermon audio, the only narrations that really get a large audience are those of Spurgeon, George Whitefield, Jonathan Edwards, some A.W. Pink, some John Owen, but a lot of the things that I would like an audience to listen to that would be very much for their edification don't have much of a demand. But if they impress me and I know that they would be advantageous to the listeners, I'll narrate them and put them out there hoping that the supply will create the demand. Well, thank you for tuning into this. The irony is, I know even this recording isn't going to have a very large audience who's heard of Thomas Sullivan, but I felt that at least a little bit of this history needed to be put out there so that if anything happens to me in the next week or month or years or whatever, maybe it'll inspire somebody, if the Lord should delay his coming, to do what I have been doing now coming on 36 years. This is a narrated Puritan, Owensboro, Kentucky.